Welcome to the world today. We've talked on many occasions concerning the fraud that has occurred among people in Israel as pertains to the worldwide, I guess we call it a colony, of the Jewish elitists who have tried to turn the entire world into their own, well, sort of money bank. Going right along with their worldwide colonial enterprises, in which together they've attempted to and have pretty much successfully surrounded the world with their web of banking. The Israel Discount Bank recently was caught in several fraudulent enterprises, one of which was transferring $2.2 billion worth of Brazilian money, allowing them to move that money through their offices. And they were able to get out of this by paying off the FBI. I believe their fine was $25 million because they illegally transported all of this money. Now, can you imagine? You move $2.2 billion and you're only fined $25 million. Now, if you and I, who are Gentiles, did that, we, of course, would go to jail for many, many years, but not a single person that I know of has gone to jail for this immense multi-billion dollar fraud that was going on, which may very well have allowed drug money to be channeled from scurrilous mafia pockets to the Israel Discount Bank, either into the United States or into Israel or somewhere else. We're not sure where. Now, coming to the rescue was Matthew Bronfman of the Jewish Whiskey Mafia fame. You know, the Bronfman family that was Jewish Mafia in Canada that floated booze across the Great Lakes to the United States of America during Prohibition, making a tremendous fortune, and who now, together as a family, rule much of Israel, much of Canada, much of the United States through their influence and through their money, because they are worth billions and billions of dollars. Well, at any rate, Matthew Bronfman is taking over the Israel Discount Bank, and he'll probably be living in Israel while he runs that particular bank. And this is proof positive, again, that if you are of the Zionist Jewish supremacist tribe, you can generally get by with any type of fraud that you want to or that you need to, because you have connections, you have banking money, you have media, you have congressmen, you have the president, you have all sorts of people afraid of you because of what the other members of the Jewish supremacist elites can do to these people. And this, of course, helps you to get off scot-free no matter what type of crime that you have committed. Must be pretty nice. I would imagine it would be very nice. In Wisconsin, there's a big hullabaloo about a newspaper that's been delivered there. And it seems that the Gentiles are unable to have their own newspaper. That's just not supposed to be done, and the Capital Times web edition in Madison, Wisconsin, has written a story about it, in which they're very concerned that this publication that's dedicated to Gentiles is stirring in the West Side neighborhood, because a few copies have been appearing in driveways. One resident, who did not want her name used because she said she fears retaliation, said it's very disturbing. She discovered an issue of what? The 16-page tabloid Ariel Alternative on Monday in the driveway of the Langlois Street house where she lives. She described the paper as racist and anti-Jewish, and I'll bet you she's got a Jewish name. What do you bet? Another person by the name of Miller was interviewed, and he's supposedly a Gentile. He's been passing the newspapers out, and he says, "We're trying to awaken white people." The publisher of this paper is Alex Linder, who's the founder of Vanguard News Network, and who, according to the Anti-Defamation League, isn't it funny how that word comes up, Anti-Defamation League? It's as though the newspapers can't print a story without the National Office of the Anti-Defamation League saying something. At any rate, this usual suspect, the Anti-Defamation League, has said that Alex Lender split with the neo-Nazi National Alliance to found the White Freedom Party. Now, that's interesting, because how many times have you heard the neo-Nazi cult National Alliance or the neo-Nazi National Alliance? They can't seem to mention National Alliance without putting neo-Nazi in front of it. It's almost an Anti-Defamation League mantra, and a mantra of the newspaper profession that they have to use that phrase in order to prove that they're good old boys. And they get patted on the back by the National Defamation League for this. Now, they were very precise in saying that copies of the newspaper were wrapped in plastic shopping bags. And they saw them in two driveways. Can you imagine? Now, here you have this entire city, and they found these newspapers in two driveways. How many people are in the city? 5,000 people, and they found them in two driveways, and suddenly they're writing an article about it. Now, Carlos Valentin, who is a police spokesman, said that he'd gotten two complaints about the newspapers. I guess they're from those two driveways, right? He said distributing offensive literature is not a crime. Well, I'm not really sure what was so offensive about the Aryan Alternative. Probably they had a different view of immigration and of the goodness of Jewish people. And for that reason, they were racist. Now, it's okay that the National Office of the Anti-Defamation League refers to the Neo-Nazi National Alliance or the Neo-Nazi National Vanguard when they write their diatribes. Oh, no, that's not hateful at all. Of course, if I were to call the Anti-Defamation League a Neo-Bolshevik Anti-Defamation League, which I have done on many times, to tell you the truth, when they call other people neo-Nazis, I always refer to them as neo-Bolsheviks because they are neo-Bolsheviks. And let me tell you why. Because their relatives in the Soviet Union, and many of them came from Russia, they were deported over here because of their communism. Their relatives, their great-great-grandfathers, were communists, many of them. They were Bolsheviks. They were the killers of Russia. And the Anti-Defamation League is the product of their fathers and mothers. And they are the progeny of these Bolsheviks, many of the people in the Anti-Defamation League. And if you push them on it, they will admit it. Well, maybe they won't admit it. So they're pretty good about not admitting it. But when you start tracing back what happened, they pretty much have to come clean on that. Now, the police officer said if they, meaning Lindner, and the Aryan Alternative are not making specific threats, it's hard to prove the literature is doing any harm. If people don't like where it's coming from, they can dump it in the trash, he said. Well, I think that's true. Could probably dump this entire article in the trash. This article seems to be just a few lines long, and it's just to make white people look bad. There isn't one positive thing that they said about this paper. And they did quote Mr. Miller, but all they said was, what he said was, we're trying to wake up white people, I pass them out wherever we go to white people. And I guess just by saying white people, well, you know what. If you say white people, you're talking about those evil people, aren't you? I think that's what they think they're talking about. When they talk about white people, they're trying to make you think that if you're white, you're that dirty, nasty Aryan rascal that newspaper's talking about. We have a story here that is somewhat deeply troubling, in that you have this 2% of America who are Jewish trying to tell the American people what they should think. Congress, in its, I can't really say wisdom, because I think the Congress is fairly stupid for going along with the Anti-Defamation League too often. The Congress has passed the first national voucher program for private and religious schools. and it's going to take effect in the fiscal year 2006. That's a part of the Defense Appropriations Bill. So Abraham Foxman steps forward, and we've discussed this before. Abraham Foxman, for those of you who don't know, is the ADL National Director. That's the Anti-Defamation League. And Mr. Foxman loves to open his mouth. That vile, disgusting mouth of his is constantly open, and he says in his publication on the internet at ADL.org, quote, "Without hearings and under the rubric of providing assistance to displaced students in the Gulf Coast region, in the aftermath of the tragic Katrina and Rita hurricanes, Congress has approved restart funding and tuition assistance for public, private, and religious schools without necessary constitutional and anti-discrimination safeguards." Now, notice he uses several words here that are somewhat inflammatory. One of them is the phrase "without hearings," and then "under the rubric of providing assistance." In other words, there's something wrong here. There's something false about this providing assistance. And then he says "without necessary constitutional and anti-discrimination safeguards." In other words, he's basically saying separation of church and state. Now, Mr. Foxman and the Anti-Defamation League rarely come forward when the Congress is passing the $10 billion or so that goes to Israel every year, Israel being a religious state and a racist state, which only allows Jewish people in. And to be a Jew, if your father's a Jew and your mother isn't, you're not a Jew. Your mother has to be Jewish before you can go to Israel and become a Jew. Or you have to convert or something, but you can go there if you're an atheist, and about 60 to 75% of the people there, according to their own newspapers, don't believe in God. The same number here. But they consider themselves Jew. It's sort of the way that Germans, who are Lutheran, even if they don't believe in God, they still might consider themselves Lutheran. And if they convert, let's say, to Judaism, they'd still be Germans, wouldn't they? That's about the way the Israelis look at things. You can be an atheist and you can be a Jew and go right on in there, but your mom's got to be Jewish. And that's very racist, and because it's based on DNA inheritance. Mr. Foxman says, "We are very sympathetic to the plight of the students who attend the devastated schools in the Gulf Coast region. But this funding scheme..." How's that for a negative word? Scheme. Almost sounds criminal, doesn't it? "But this funding scheme does not provide appropriate firewalls," as though, oh, there's a raging fire here that should be put out, "against taxpayer funding of religious instruction and proselytizing, and sets a disturbing precedent for the future." Now, Mr. Foxman's ADL tries to act, and it's a religious organization. They're part of the B'nai B'rith. It's ADL of B'nai B'rith. B'nai B'rith is a racist organization with a racist name. It means the covenant of the cut. It means the religious sadistic ritual of male sexual part destruction. The cut, the circumcision of the male child, ritual sexual child abuse and mutilation. That's what it means, which all of these male Jews have to undergo. Now, if you wanted to clip somebody's ears and say, "Oh, that's for a religious reason," you wouldn't be able to do it, but you can cut off a piece of that part on a little boy, and it's okay. Even though they scream and they cry and they bleed, and some of them have actually died from this, from infection. There was a story last year about a rabbi who had herpes. He cut this foreskin off, and he put his lips down there and kissed it, and three or four children got herpes from him, and one of them died from the infection. And his parents, being religious, said, "Well, there's nothing we can do about it. We're not going to sue." He certainly didn't mean it. And he may not have meant it. At any rate, this person who is with this religion that feels that it can go to law enforcement around the country and get federal money to do this, even though it's a religious institution, and then teach these policemen how vile Christians are and how dangerous they are, and how the right-wing Christian militia is going to destroy the country, and that we're filled with hate, etc. when in fact it's the ADL that's filled with hate, because it's the ADL that uses the word hate so constantly. And you know a person by the words they use, and the words that these Jews use in the ADL is the word hate. They take it upon themselves as a little insignificant mouse of a minority to tell the elephant of America, which is 98 times bigger than they are, actually we're 98% and they're 2%, so we're 49% bigger than they are. We can hardly see them. This minuscule minority refuses to act like a minority and tries to act as though it is supreme over us. And it starts to define our institutions not only as Christian, but as vile Christians. Funding of religious instruction and proselytizing. This shows their antichrist hatred toward Christianity. And whether you're religious or not, it is antichrist in the definition that if you do something against the Christian religion, you are an antichrist, and that's what they are. And if you're an atheist, you can understand that phrase. And if you're a Jew, you can understand that phrase. And we're supposed to be anti-Semitic, but they are antichrist is what they are. And these antichrists who hate the Christian religion and can't stand the idea of giving funding to a simple little Christian church that will provide a school for kids at much less cost than if the public did it, for a fraction of it. He says these provisions approved by Congress do not include necessary prohibitions against using these funds for religious education or even worship services. Well, you bigot. You bigot. Abe Foxman, you are a bigoted anti-Christian individual. You're anti-majority, you're anti-Christian, you are filled with hate, aren't you? The provisions, you say, approved by Congress do not include necessary prohibitions against using these funds for religious education or even worship services. You, sir, are attacking religious people here. You are a bigot. You're anti-ethnic prejudice against these people. Your hate is so self-evident in these words. You are filled with hate. Under the bill, Mr. Foxman says, parents would be forced to affirmatively act to opt out their children from these religious worship activities. Well, let's see now. What does that mean? They would be forced to opt out. Well, aren't they forced to opt out now when they go to an atheist public school? Don't they opt out of all religious services and instruction? And don't they do it because if they don't opt out and send their kid to the public school, they lose their education money? Because if they go to a religious school, don't they have to pay for it themselves? And Mr. Foxman, by the way, don't most Jewish people send their kids to a Jewish school? I tend to remember something that I read about that. That a very large number of Jewish people send their kids to a Jewish school. Because I guess they just don't want to go to school with blacks. And I don't think there's too many blacks in the Jewish religion because Sammy Davis Jr. is dead now. So he's not around to integrate, and I don't think he had any kids either. So obviously when you go to your Jewish school, you're opting out of not only these atheist schools that are public so that you could have religious instruction, but you're also opting out of integration because, hey, there aren't too many blacks or Chinese or Jews that I know of, are there? We know what you're doing, you little racist person. We know. We know exactly what you're doing. And we're really getting kind of sick of it. In addition, Mr. Foxman says, this bill, this wretched bill, would permit federally funded religious discrimination, oh my God, in hiring teachers for these private religious schools. Well, Mr. Foxman, it seems to me that the major Ivy League schools are run by Jewish individuals who are the presidents and chancellors of those schools. And they've made sure that most of the departments where there's real money, like business and medicine and the legal law schools, are run by Jewish people. And guess what? You've packed them full of Jewish students and Jewish teachers. And you've used federal grant money for that that goes to these universities, don't you? Yes, you do. And then you put a Hillel house. I almost said Hillel house. That's probably closer. But the Hillel house is on almost every campus. So that when people go to school there, your money is used to continually to propagandize these Jewish students in their Jewish background. So you're providing religious instruction, and you're using the school as a kind of religious field that draws all these Jews together, and then you put your little building there, and they come right to you. So you're using a lot of federal money for your religious proselytizing, Mr. Foxman. You didn't mention that. You also didn't mention that we're spending $10 billion on Israel, which is a religious proselytizing and racist proselytizing and tribal proselytizing mess. And we're using our money for your racist state of Israel, your religious state of Israel, your Jewish state of Israel, which lives in apartheid. Mr. Foxman also states, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that vouchers in certain limited circumstances did not violate First Amendment principles of church-state separation, but the court did not say vouchers were a good idea. Well, that's kind of disingenuous, Mr. Foxman. That was really stupid. I don't know why you even said that. That's just a laugh line. We will continue to oppose government funding for religious schools as an infringement on religious liberty. Really? In other words, if someone's openly worshiping in a school, that's an infringement on religious liberty? Would seem to me that worshiping in a school, Mr. Foxman, is a bountiful use of religious liberty, not an infringement. And why do you think it's an infringement? As you say here, because such funds will inevitably be accompanied by an unacceptable effort by the government to monitor and control religious activities. Well, that kind of makes sense, because that's kind of American. Every time the federal government puts money out, it does try to monitor and control religious activities, and I would have to agree with that. But, sir, you're the one that's really monitoring these religious activities and wants to control them. You're the one that's coming up with this stupid argument. So you're the control freak, aren't you? Not the federal government. Oh, I just can't stand lies like this. So I'll have to go on to another story. Well, I have here an article from Mr. Nader. It's a letter, actually. And it reminds me how easy it is to cut up Mr. Foxman of the ADL. Mr. Foxman is he's kind of a blustering idiot in many ways. And the only reason he gets by with what he gets by with is that the newspapers will print what he has to say. Which is basically what Mr. Nader says in this letter, which is a fantastic letter entitled, Criticizing Israel is Not Anti-Semitism. Well, isn't that interesting? If it's not anti-Semitism, then what in the heck is it? Let's find out what it is. Dear Mr. Foxman, Ralph Nader writes, you started your last letter with the sentence, we are not engaged in a dialogue about the issues you raised in your letter. And this is the letter between Nader and Foxman, who's the director of the Anti-Defamation League, which is a prejudiced, racist Jewish organization that pretends not to be a racist, prejudiced Jewish organization. That is precisely the point, is it not, Mr. Foxman, that for many years you have eschewed engaging in a dialogue with those in Israel and in the United States who disagree with your views. Your mode of operation for years has been to make charges of racism or insinuation of racism designed to slander and evade. Because your pattern of making such charges, carefully calibrated for the occasion but of the same stigmatizing intent, has served to deter critical freedom of speech, you have become sloppy with your characterizations when it comes to attempts to hold you accountable. Of course, citizens groups make charges all the time, but their critics and corporate adversaries do review and rebut, which keeps both sides more alert to accuracy, especially when they desire press coverage. But Mr. Foxman, unfortunately, few groups get the free ride that has been the case of the Anti-Defamation League, or the ADL, when it ventures beyond its historic mission into covering the Israeli militaristic regime and its brutalization and slaughter of far more innocent Palestinians it occupies than the reverse casualties inflicted on innocent Israelis. Mr. Nader says to Mr. Foxman of the ADL in this letter, your insensitivity here is legion. Mr. Foxman, you fail to understand that your studied refusal to reflect the condemnations of Israeli military action and mayhem against civilians by the great Israeli human rights organization B'Tselem and the major international human rights organizations contributes to the stereotypic bigotry against Palestinian Arabs and the violent gulag that imprisons them in the West Bank and Gaza. Mr. Foxman, yours is more than the crime of silence so deservedly condemned in other periods of modern history when despots reigned. Mr. Foxman, you and the ADL go out of your way to silence or chill others who are raising the same points that B'Tselem and Rabbis for Justice and other U.S. and Israeli peace groups such as Rabbi Lerner's Tikkun Initiative do. Is this great or what? I mean, here you have an Arab from Lebanon, Ralph Nader, arguing with a French Jew living in the United States, a French Jew who was raised by a French Catholic family so that he wouldn't be deported during World War II, who then turned on the Christians and has had this kind of awful life of slander against the Gentiles, those who saved him, or at least so he says. Mr. Nader says, you are not above twisting words of those you take to task in order to be able to deploy the usual semantic vituperatives. My comments related to the Israeli government with the fifth most powerful and second most modern military machine in the world through its prime minister possessing the role of puppeteer to puppets in the White House and Congress. I love that line. Its prime minister possessing the role of puppeteer to puppets in the White House and Congress. And isn't that the truth? We are nothing here in America but an annex for Israel. We are the Israeli annex. We are behind. We are like the building behind the big building at a school. We're the big building, and Israel's very tiny, but it's the tail wagging the dog. Its prime minister, Israel's prime minister, possessing the role of puppeteer to puppets in the White House and Congress. You, Mr. Foxman, distorted the comment into, quote, Jews controlling the U.S. government, unquote. Shame on you. You know better, Mr. Foxman. If your ADL does not see the difference between these two designations, you yourself are treading on racist grounds. Indeed, you are too willing to justify any violence against innocent Palestinian children, women, and men, in the mounting thousands on the grounds of inadvertence and security, when such casualties are either direct or foreseeable results of planned military operations. Your refusal to condemn bigoted language, cartoons, articles, and statements in Israel up to the highest government levels can be called serious insensitivity to that other anti-Semitism. Both Jews and Arabs, Mr. Foxman, belong to the ancient Semitic tribes of the Middle East, either genealogically or metaphorically. There is, as you know so well, anti-Semitism against Jews in many places in the world. There is, as you always ignore, aggressive anti-Semitism against defenseless Arabs in many places in the world and in Israel, whose military might and nuclear weapons could destroy the entire Middle East in a weekend. And this great letter is from Ralph Nader. And you can find it on the internet by just putting Ralph Nader counterpunch anti-Semitic Abe Foxman into a Google search and it will come up with it for you. Or you can go to Jewwatch and you can find it there. We have it listed there under Nader Defies ADL's Malicious Slander. Thank you very much, Mr. Nader. Excellent, excellent work. And so true. You know, nothing bothers the Jewish supremacists and their puppets in government more than a Gentile willing to wear the Nazi symbol of the swastika. And so I come to this story, which almost makes me laugh. And it's in Cadillac, Michigan. And the city has changed its policies to avoid embarrassment by a Nazi group. Now get this story. In Cadillac, Michigan, this spring, when the winter grime around Cadillac parks needs to be swept away, Dan Carlson, who's a Nazi, plans to join his Nazi friends and lend a hand. Carlson and other members of the Cadillac chapter of the National Socialist Movement, a group that dubs itself America's Nazi Party, will not be deterred by controversy that surrounded their participation in a park cleanup last May. Mr. Carlson said, "We are who we are, and we're not going to bow down to anybody who doesn't like us. They're not going to pressure us into changing who we are just because they don't agree with it." The Nazi group's involvement made international headlines last summer after the Record Eagle newspaper reported the group received a certificate of appreciation signed by Cadillac Mayor Ronald Blanchard. Yeah, baby. They sent him a certificate of appreciation for the Nazi Party. Needless to say, by accident. Pictures of the group at the cleanup appeared on the National Socialist Movement's website, showing members wearing a swastika arm patch, Nazi t-shirts, and taking time out to pose for a picture while engaging in a Heil Hitler salute. Oh, my goodness. Must restrain myself here. Cadillac officials backed away from the National Socialist Movement, saying Cadillac does not support Nazi ideology. Well, I bet you could have heard the breeze when they backed away. Whoosh! That's so fast. I mean, it's amazing. I'm surprised there were any leaves left on the trees. Blanchard pre-signed the certificates, and a city employee who handed it out didn't realize it was awarded to a Nazi group, officials said. Here comes the National Defamation League. I knew it was going to come in the article somewhere. The certificate prompted Betsy Kelman, regional director of the Racist Anti-Defamation League in Michigan, to visit Cadillac. She said she was disturbed that a Nazi-affiliated group could get an appreciative gesture from a city. Oh, this is too much. Kelman said, despite the negative attention bestowed on Cadillac, it prompted positive changes such as creation of Cadillac United, a citizens group that meets monthly to promote tolerance. Well, Miss Kelman of the ADL, does that mean that you've learned to tolerate the Nazis when they come to help the city by cleaning the park? Or that you tolerate them and allow them to get a certificate of appreciation from the city of Cadillac? No, I didn't think so, Miss Kelman. Miss Kelman says, I think we've opened a lot of eyes, and I think the town is more eager to welcome diversity. Well, isn't that something? You little racists are just something else, aren't you? You just never get tired of it. It really doesn't get much better than this, doing a World Today program and reading the bizarreness of these stories and the two-facedness of it, the double standard. Now, there was a menorah that was broken off by somebody, which I think is wrong. No one should vandalize somebody's religious artifact. And in Poughkeepsie, or town close to Poughkeepsie, New Windsor, New York, a ceremony has taken place against those vandals, which I think is good. I don't think people should vandalize anybody's religious artifact. It says that a new menorah was raised and dedicated by local religious leaders 4 days after another menorah was vandalized and destroyed at the same site. Rabbi Yaakov Borenstein, who erected the original menorah in New Windsor, said it was important to replace the damaged religious symbol to make a statement. We want to show it doesn't break our spirits, said Borenstein of Chabad Lubavitch of the Mid-Hudson Valley. He was followed by fellow religious leaders and community activists who said they wanted to show solidarity with the local Jewish community. I'm sure these are the usual suspects. The Catholics, the Lutherans, the all these people who are in the National Council of Churches, etc., etc. I'm sure that's what we have here, the Zionist Christians. And Jesus Christ himself would just wretch if he knew that they were doing this, because Jesus was extremely anti-Semitic and warned people about the Jews. I mean, he tried to tear up their temple. He said, there won't be a stone left in the temple, and good riddance to it. At any rate, these people who are denying their Savior have joined these Jewish leaders here. You may say, oh, Frank, that's a terrible thing to say. No, it's not a terrible thing. It's the historical truth. I'm simply relaying the historical truth that Jesus would not go up there with them and say, oh, just because you guys murdered me and thrashed me to an inch of my life and made me bleed and bleed and bleed all night long, and you were mean to me all the time that I was around you, and that after I raised Lazarus from the dead, you killed him. You sent people out to kill him. I'm going to stick up for your rights. No, I don't think he would. But these so-called Judeo-Christians will, because they're traitors to Jesus Christ. At any rate, the story says, each year for Hanukkah, Borenstein and his group place about 30 menorahs in public spaces around the mid-Hudson Valley, including a large menorah on Poughkeepsie's Main Street. Now, for those who are stupid, it explains that a menorah is a candelabrum which branches for 9 candles. Well, duh, I think we know that, sir. Now, the same night that the menorah went down, several mailboxes were destroyed in a nearby housing development. And police said the two crimes could be related. But I bet you the one with the mailboxes was not a hate crime, but that with the menorah would be. But let's get back to the story. I don't think we could just be quiet about it. Michael Sussman, civil rights attorney, said, I think there has to be a broad consensus that this stuff is not to be tolerated. And I would agree. I wouldn't tolerate it either. Then we have this really illuminating statement. There are about 11,000 menorahs on display in public places around the U.S. this year, said Joe Levy, New York Regional Director of the Anti-Defamation League. Nationally, there have been 6 reports this year of vandalism to the displays, which Levy said is about average. Now, I find that very interesting. 11,000 menorahs in public places, which the ADL says that this is religious proselytizing. You know, like if you have a manger, you know, this and that, that's terrible, but these menorahs are evidently okay because they're Jewish. But the fact that there were 11,000 of them in public places and only 6 of them were broken and vandalized, which is about average. You know what, Mr. Levy? You guys have it pretty good in this country. I mean, somebody could just simply have accidentally driven his car over. You don't know if somebody did it on purpose or not. Possibly they did. Let's say they did, and you lost 6 menorahs out of 11,000. You know what? You could lose more than that in a 3-mile wind. I mean, you're doing really well here. You lost 6 out of 11,000. If you divide 6 into 12,000, you come out with about 1 menorah for every 2,000 somebody did something bad to. And it's probably some kids, or maybe with some ignorant person who just can't stand Jews, I don't know. But for you to make a big, big deal out of it, like this is what all white people do, let me tell you something, buddy. There's 300 million people in this country, and you guys are only, at the most, 9 million, but you're probably more like 4. Here we are as white people, and there's, let's see, 180 million white people, there's 40 million black people, and there's 50 million of other types of people here. And there's about 6 to 9 million Jews. So, out of this 290 million Gentiles who are not Jewish, 290 million, you would think that with 11,000 menorahs out there, that 100 of them would get busted by somebody just accidentally stepping on one. Now, you have to make some big anti-Semitic thing out of it, but with that many people, almost 300 million people and 11,000 menorahs, you and they're in public places, someone's going to accidentally fall against one and break it. What's wrong with you guys? Do you have that much of a desire to pretend that you're a victim? The story itself, that only 6 menorahs were busted out of 11,000, means that you Jews have it really good in this country. And there's almost nobody at all that would ever do anything to harm you. Everybody loves a good scandal. And of course, here at The World Today, where we talk about the Jewish supremacists, we constantly come across scandals. And there's a really big one going on in Washington right now around a Jewish lobbyist by the name of Jack Abramoff. Now, touching this man is like derailing a train. You touch him, you're dead, politically. This guy has so much corruption and scandal going on, it's just incredible, and he's ready to turn state's evidence, and congressmen and people in the White House are running for cover because they've all taken money from this guy. They're all associated with him, and now guess what? It's gotten so serious that it seems the man was associated with a murder, a scandal where somebody died. Because in one of the deals that went especially bad for the notorious Jack Abramoff, who is an ADL member, I believe, and somebody who's a member of B'nai B'rith, and he's a Jew, and a partner, Adam Kidon, who I believe is also Jewish, the owner of a gambling cruise ship fleet, who bought it from Gus Bulis. And Gus, unfortunately, was shot and killed in his car at point-blank range in Fort Lauderdale. And two of those who were arrested on first-degree murder for the murder of the original owner of the gambling cruise ship fleet, Gus Bulis, had received payments from Kidon, the partner of Jack Abramoff, for catering and surveillance services. Now, this is the most grisly of the charges that have been swamping Abramoff and his various associates over the last year. And now a pack of congressmen is playing 6 degrees of Jack Abramoff. And the game is this way. Anyone separated by less than 2 degrees will retain counsel. And anyone with checks from Abramoff will never take another. And there's been a rush to send back previous checks. Anyone who took a trip paid for by Abramoff wishes there were a way to return it. How do you take a trip back? Those on two infamous excursions to St. Andrews in Scotland may never swing a 9-iron easily again. And there's this poor congressman, Robert Ney, a Republican from Ohio. He's the poster child for how to smear your career with knowing Jack Abramoff. Because poor Robert Ney, the representative from Ohio, for whom 6 degrees is no mere parlor game, but a struggle to clear his name with the Justice Department and keep the seat he's held since 1995. Well, it's a tough road to hoe for him. Congressman Robert Ney, had the terrible misfortune of attacking Bulis, the man who was killed, in the congressional record when Abramoff and Kidon were trying to buy Bulis' Sun Cruise fleet. For that, Ney has found himself memorialized in Justice Department documents as, quote, Representative Number One, unquote. Prosecutors are investigating him as part of their indictment of Abramoff and Kidon for fraud in the Sun Cruise purchase. What's important to know about Ney is that if he's bad, Capitol Hill is just hopeless. A nicer guy you'd never want to meet than Robert Ney, and until he fell in with bad company, Ney was just going about his business of mutual back-scratching, log-rolling, and favor-swapping. You know, the usual corruption on Capitol Hill. One day, Ney realizes that one of those favors was for a bunch of Jewish fixers who used to work on the Hill, but are now mixed up with characters so unsavory they could star in their own made-for-TV movie. Abramoff is influence peddling, run amok, and Ney's name is now inextricably tied to him and Sun Cruise. This poor guy, Bully, was a very hard-working immigrant, and he went into several businesses, and then one day he realized that you could gamble, not in Florida, but if you went 12 miles outside the constitutional United States, out in the ocean, you could gamble out there because there was no law. You were suddenly a nation of your own. So he started the Sun Cruise fleet and became an absolute billionaire. These Jews decided, Abramov and Kidan, that they were going to buy him out. They didn't like the way it was going, and all of a sudden the guy ends up dead, killed by two associates of Kidan. And here you have Abramov, associated with all these congressmen, with the president, people of both parties. And it's, hey, you know what? Be careful who you're friends with, especially when they come from the tribe, because a lot of them, not all of them, but not a lot of them really, but some of them who are real swingers are up to no good. And in some cases, you might want to call them mafia. These are candidates for stars in the next Joe Soprano movie, which we could call Joe Abrams instead of Joe Soprano very, very easily. Or the Robert Cohen Adventure, whatever. Some nice Jewish name. You can find a ton of articles about Jack Abramoff, believe me. I was looking at one at Mother Jones, which is on the internet at motherjones.com, where they talked about the Republican National Convention, and the former weightlifter waited for his turn to speak. And we're talking about Jack Abramoff here. And he began predictably, "I come before you representing American students," and all of a sudden he got panicked. Then in 1984, the Speaker Jack Abramoff, who was the national chair of the College Republicans, commander of a platoon of baby-faced Reagan enthusiasts, a self-described rabid right-winger, he had planned to use his slot at the Dallas Convention for a red meat speech that mocked the preaching style of Jesse Jackson. But he got nervous because party officials had taken a pen to his text and turned it into a namby-pamby, "We're all young people and we love Ronald Reagan, blah, blah, blah." Now, with Abramov's note cards for backup, he was reconstituting his original speech from memory. And he said, "Today our party readies itself to mount the wave of the future. Will we ride that wave to glory, or will it send us crashing ashore? If we're the party of tax cuts, not the party of ifs and buts, then we're riding our wave. If we're liberating students from Grenada and not bowing down to Cuban dictators, we're riding our wave." Now, some of the Texans in California started applauding. And he said, "But if we equivocate, capitulate, and accommodate and negotiate, we'll crash ashore." If that doesn't sound like Jesse Jackson or Farrakhan, I don't know what it does. "If we try to outspend the big fat Tip O'Neill or rush to Geneva or cut a deal, we'll crash ashore." Well, it took Abramoff's wave another 20 years to crash ashore. A millionaire lobbyist who befriended Washington's most powerful men, Abramoff has been at the center of a full-blown national scandal with revelations that he bled Indian clients to the tune of $82 million, even as he sometimes worked for their political competitors, that he funneled cash to his pet causes and fuzzed up the paper trail, that he wrote emails mocking his own clients as troglodytes. "Yeah, I got this Indian out there in South Dakota. What a troglodyte. Can you imagine?" The probes have spiraled to include a broad cross-section of Washington's Republican power structure, including House Majority Leader Tom DeLay and former Christian Coalition Director Ralph Reed. Yet it's Abramoff's name, more than anyone else's, that has become a synonym for corruption, particularly since his August 11th indictment for wire fraud in a case involving a failed gambling boat business venture. Melanie Sloan, executive director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, said, "I don't think Abramoff ever stood for anything. In fact, I think Abramoff just stands for greed. I think Abramoff is a terrible human being and should get anything coming his way," which I suppose means jail time. She must be an anti-Semite, because, gee whiz, ma'am, Jack's a Jew. By the way, in this article, a little further down, it talks about when he was 13, and it says, in the heat of a Los Angeles summer afternoon, the 13-year-old Jack Abramoff set off from home and began walking 5 miles to his synagogue. He was hungry and thirsty. It was the Jewish holy day of Tish B'Av, when observers are not allowed to consume food or water for 24 hours. Well, I bet he'd like to have a Baby Ruth candy bar about that time. Wouldn't you, Jack? Wouldn't you have liked that? I shouldn't corrupt a kid when he's 13 years old. Anyway, Jack continued, grasping for his interpretation of the law, the boy had convinced himself that he wasn't supposed to ride in a car or even wear shoes. He was a good Jewish boy, Jack Abramoff. He walked along the fence of the Los Angeles Country Club, an institution that historically excluded Jews. The pavement was hot and full of small stones, and his stocking feet began to blister. But when a member of the synagogue offered him a ride, he refused. To young Jack Abramoff, the religion of his ancestors was perilously close to fading away in his generation, and he wasn't going to fail it. There you go. He came of age in Beverly Hills, Jack Abramoff did. He was a son of an executive who worked for Arnold Palmer, the famously conservative golfer. And the language of Jack Abramoff's childhood was about patriotism and honoring elders, and he often heard stories about the plight of Soviet Jews. Oy vey, those Jews of the Soviet Union. Well, I bet he never heard about how the Soviet Union was run by Jews, though, did he? No siree, you can bet that his daddy never talked about that. Every once in a while you read a story that makes you realize just how low a person will stoop, how low he will go to pander to the Jewish supremacists and to their colony known as the world, the planet that we live on, which is their colony. They have the whole thing colonized. And there's always somebody who will bend his knee and grovel before them. And we have this district attorney that's described in the Jewish Advocate Online in a story by Shande Race entitled, "The DA Arraigns Youths for Anti-Semitic Vandalism at Synagogue." Well, they're not exactly youths. I think of a youth as someone being like 18, 19, 20. These are little kids. These are 14-year-olds. Three 14-year-old juveniles were arrested by Swampscott police, ending a 2-month search for the perpetrators behind two anti-Semitic incidents at the Lubavitch Synagogue of the North Shore. These poor kids were arraigned at the Lynn Juvenile Court on December 19th and 20th for allegedly committing a series of hate crimes against the synagogue. Hate crimes, yes. Ooh. The first incident occurred a few days before Rosh Hashanah, when vandals entered the building to an unlocked door and scrawled anti-Semitic graffiti on the walls of the synagogue. I wonder what the graffiti said. I don't see anything here about it. 2 weeks later, a van belonging to synagogue was torched in its parking lot. Why did they say to synagogue and not to the synagogue? They always do that. The 14-year-olds were charged with hate crimes and will be tried for the destruction of property in excess of $5,000. But what did they do that cost $5,000? They spray paint a few things on a wall of a synagogue and on a truck? And that's $5,000? Gee whiz, the dollar's down to nothing, isn't it? The youths were not part of any official anti-Semitic or neo-Nazi group, a according to the Office for District Attorney for the Essex County District. The DA, Jonathan W. Blodgett, a race traitor if ever there was one, says, "My office takes hate crimes very seriously." Pander, pander, pander. Yes, he's pandering to the Jewish elitists. And he's betraying his own people, because I assume from his picture and his name that he's probably a Gentile. But he wants to kiss up to the boots of his Jewish masters. And so in kissing their boots, Mr. Blodgett says, quote, "We must be named after a pizza oven. Isn't the Blodgett oven a pizza oven?" He says, Mr. Blodgett says, quote, "It is important that the community at large understand that any hate crime that's charged will be pursued vigorously, because they must understand that we will protect people to make sure that the right message is always sent," unquote. And what message is that, Mr. Blodgett? That you are an idiot? That you are an insensitive dolt? That in order to get Jews to give you money for your election campaign, that you will sacrifice three little 14-year-olds who are having fun for a couple of nights? Adults found guilty of a hate crime can face up to 2.5 years in the state correctional facility and or fines of up to $5,000. They can also be liable for up to 3 times the property damage and restitution, as well as a surcharge of $100 to be deposited in the Diversity Awareness Trust Fund, and they must also complete diversity awareness programs. Well, it would seem to me that if they went into a synagogue and put anti-Semitic graffiti there, they must be aware of diversity. Would they really need to be taught that there is diversity? It would seem to me that it was self-evident that they already knew that it was there. And maybe they wanted to have fun with it. Yeah, maybe they just wanted to piss these people off a little bit. And now you're calling it a hate crime? Don't you have a sense of humor when a little kid does something, makes a mistake? I tell you what, if they were Jewish kids, you wouldn't be charging them with a hate crime, would you? Oh, but they're Gentiles, so, yeah, they're guilty of a hate crime. However, the story says in the case of juveniles who are found guilty of a hate crime, the maximum penalty is commitment to the Department of Youth Services until age 18. Well, you see how kind the government can be. They're 14, and 4 years they'll get out after being committed to the Department of Youth Services for 4 years. Once the verdict is made, the Department of Youth Services then determines the appropriate punishment for the offenders. Off with their heads. Get those little anti-Semites, cut their heads off. Throw them into a vat of acid. If the juveniles are found guilty and the judge determines that the synagogue is owed restitution, they will still be able to collect despite the age of the offenders, said Assistant District Attorney Bill Melkonian. I swear to God, the news is just so bizarre. Now, if you thought that we had scraped the bottom of the barrel, you'd probably be correct, but you're not. No, you're not. In the Jewish Forward, founded in 1897 and published weekly in New York, we find that a Bible guide for public schools gets Jewish okay. Now, I'm not kidding you with this story. This is a true story. In an effort to neutralize the growing popularity of a right-wing Bible textbook for public schools, and by right-wing I guess it's positive toward Christianity maybe, I'm not sure, maybe it has a respect for God. In an effort to neutralize the growing popularity of a right-wing Bible textbook for public schools, two major Jewish organizations are backing an alternative study guide. But some liberal watchdogs warn that the alternative textbook also could lead teachers to violate the separation of church and state. Here comes this ADL phrase again and again. The separation of church and state. These people are, they're just so hung up on that. They have such a hate for Christianity. The new textbook, entitled The Bible and Its Influence, unquote, has been endorsed by the American Jewish Congress and the Anti-Defamation League, as well as Catholic leaders and a wide range of liberal and conservative Protestants. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know, never underestimate the cowardice of the Gentile. Never. They are so cowardly. If you never underestimate their cowardice, you will never be disappointed. Now here we have the American Jewish Congress and the Anti-Defamation League, two racist organizations, and pandering Catholic leaders and a wide range of liberal and conservative, neurotic, freaked out Protestants. All left wing, I'll bet you. The ADL, it says, and the AJC Congress, or the AJ Congress, the American Jewish Congress, both have condemned another textbook entitled, quote, "The Bible in History and Literature," unquote, used in more than 300 school districts across the country, according to its publisher. That darned book, we've got to get rid of it. We need one that's written by Jews. We can't have one written by Gentiles. That would separate. That would violate the separation of church and state, because a Jew didn't write it. A legislative fight over the two textbooks has erupted in Alabama after the Democratic Majority Leader of the state's House of Representatives, Ken Guin, introduced a bill earlier this month that would establish an elective high school course using the study Bible backed by the two Jewish groups. Religious conservatives say that Guin's measure attempts to undermine support for the Bible in history and literature already used in some Alabama schools, while liberal critics say the bill is a thinly veiled attempt to promote Bible study in public schools. Now, can you imagine? Someone's trying to teach kids that, you know, the Bible had a place in history. That all through the Middle Ages, all through the Renaissance, people were reading from the Bible. When America was formed, people read from the Bible. The first schools taught the Bible. People learned to read so they could read the Bible. And that's pretty much what they were teaching. Now, the wrangling in Alabama underscores the difficult balance that these Jewish groups are attempting to strike as they seek to maintain the church-state wall without alienating the general public or being tarred as anti-Christian by religious conservative activists. Well, I mean, if the tar sticks to you while you're bashing Christian people, I guess you're going to be tarred as a anti-Christian. And that's what you are. I mean, we're not supposed to notice? My goodness. Even as many Jewish organizations are speaking out strongly for the need to battle religious conservatives on several church-state fronts, including efforts to introduce anti-evolution theories into public schools, oh, we wouldn't want that, some Jewish communal officials have sought a compromise on the issue of teaching about the Bible and not teaching the Bible. But officials at the ADL and the Jewish Congress said, despite these misgivings, they felt compelled to offer an alternative to the Bible in History and Literature, which they described as a blatant attempt to push a right-wing Christian agenda in the schools. Well, I can understand, since you've been pushing a blatant left-wing communist Jewish school system on everybody who doesn't want it, how you wouldn't want anybody to ever mention God, that you'd always want evolution to be mentioned. And I think that a lot of you Jews are, you know, like those of you in the ADL, are a good example of what evolution can do to a person. And it's not pretty, is it? You people are really sick, you know that? You really need to go to a doctor. You need to be analyzed for your hatred of Christians. I think maybe you just feel marginalized because you're only 2%, and so you try to overdo it to take control of things. And that's sick behavior. You are guilty of sick behavior. And you really need some help. You need a psychiatrist because you are psychiatric. Do you remember the thousands of times you've seen pictures of the Nazis' torch-like parades in Berlin and Nuremberg, where they walk up and down the streets singing German songs, and how horrible that's supposed to be? Well, would you believe that the Jews have just had a torchlight menorah protest in Washington, D.C.? I'm serious. The Jews are so angry at Iran and the president of Iran for making the comment that the Jews ought to go back to Europe, that it's a European problem and not an Arab problem, that it was the Europeans who either did or did not kill Jews in the Holocaust. And in any case, they were living in Europe, and it's a European problem, and they shouldn't dump them in the Arabian world to take care of a European problem. They should go back to Europe and give them a nation of Israel somewhere among their countries and let it be a European problem. And they also questioned, of course, the Holocaust itself. And so what did the Jews do? They decided to have a torchlight march. Torchlight. Just like the Nazis. It may not have struck them that that's what they were doing, but, you know, after they spun their dreidels enough, they came up with this harebrained idea. So they made five of these candles. They had a 5-foot menorah glowing with the light of candles as Jewish and other religious leaders kept vigil in front of the interest section of the Islamic Republic of Iran in Washington, D.C. One by one, local political figures and religious representatives were slated to kindle the 8 Hanukkah lights outside the office on Wisconsin Avenue Northwest in the District of Columbia. Candle lighters were scheduled to include, among others, former Montgomery County Council President Ike Leggett and a bunch of other political wannabes who wanted to kiss up to the Jewish supremacists. They get some campaign money, no doubt. Tehran has no embassy in Washington due to long-term tensions between the two nations, so the interest section remains the most visible diplomatic symbol of Iran locally in Washington. The gathering was slated to last 1 hour and came in response to those recent remarks by Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, calling for the destruction of Israel and denying the death of 6 million Jews during the Nazi Holocaust. So they light their little torches on top of their menorahs, and they start talking. Now, one of the speeches said, "Tonight we all come together to say the threats to Israel made by the Iranian president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, that Israel must be wiped off the map, and threats to us that, as the Iranian president said, God willing, with the force of God behind it, we shall soon experience a world without the United States and Zionism. These statements are not acceptable." So we'll have our little torchlight parade with our menorah and our candlelight, and we'll just harass you. And as a matter of fact, a bunch of Jews showing up at an Iranian embassy at night by torchlight, and the torch is a menorah. Now, if this isn't ethnic terrorism, I don't know what is. It's like, we're in your face, and we're going to harass you. Now, if a bunch of Gentiles came up to a synagogue and they had a symbol in their hands, like let's say they came with pitchforks, saying, "We're mad as hell, we got pitchforks, we got torches," and they started singing na 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 in front of the synagogue and making speeches that we're not going to have Jews run our country anymore, they would be arrested on the spot for racial harassment. They would. Absolutely. That's exactly what would happen. Because it would be racial and ethnic intimidation, and that's what these Jews were doing in Washington with their torchlight parade, their menorah torchlight parade. They were intimidating these Muslims for their religion, for their ethnicity, and for their national character. And it's the double standard. You can have Jews dancing around like Nazis with a menorah torchlight parade in front of the Iranians, and no one will say a thing. But if you or I try it, they'll call us a bunch of neo-Nazis. And if there's ever a bunch of neo-Nazis, it was these Jews with the menorah torchlight parade in a very Hitlerian get-together. I want to thank you for listening to The World Today. This broadcast comes to you from St. Louis, Missouri. My name is Frank Weltner. It is my pleasure to read to you the news of the Jewish-controlled Israeli annex here in the United States. And that's all that you can call it, really. Because the Prime Minister of Israel has made our President and our White House and our Congress into his puppets. And all of these crazy stories appeared in the paper in just one day. Just one day of news. There is so much news that I've left out 200 other stories that I haven't given to you just from today alone. So there's never an end to the news that I can discuss with you on a daily basis. And I'm going to try to have this show up every day, but I get a little bit tired and sometimes I'm just not at my peak. So if you don't see it up here every day, just come back the next day or the next and you'll probably see another one of these World Today shows. I try to be fair, I try to be honest, I try to have a sense of humor. But you know the horror of all the people that have died at Jewish hands in the 20th century and now in the first 5 years of the 21st century, where the Jews have been killing people as usual in Palestine, including that memorable picture of the man with his son against the wall, who had no gun whatsoever, and those sadistic Israeli thug soldiers shot his son dead in his arms and then killed him. And we all watch that on TV. We watch the Jewish tank running over the little white girl from America who was trying to keep them from bulldozing down a Palestinian home, and they just tore her to shreds with their tank tracks. These people are savages. And they need to be arrested, and they need to be imprisoned, and some of them need to be executed. Because you just can't run around killing people like this. It's a war crime, and something needs to be done. Do you realize that almost no one in the Soviet Union who killed the 65 million Christians who died there at the hands of the Jews who ran the Red Army, who were ordered by Jews to go into the Ukraine and to kill one gulag after the other, to round them up and put them into boxcars, that none of them had to undergo Nuremberg? In fact, many of them and their relatives were the people who were prosecuting the Germans for putting Jews into boxcars. Now, there is something that's very, very irrational that the whole world really needs to know about and discuss. And they will know about it if they come to JewWatch.com, where all of the articles pertaining to this are easily found using an interface that's logical, and that will lead you to the truth about the world today and how we've become a part of a Jewish colonial empire that wraps its vicious claws around the entire world. Thank you very much for being with me today, and we will see you tomorrow.